Hello and welcome to this special exploring session looking at a dialogue. This is explicitly a satirical dialogue from the 1540s by, I assume by attribution, it's been attributed to fairly firmly to Luke Shepherd, who wrote various satires that were published during the reign of Edward VI. This is the first of a number of potential dialogue sessions that we're going to be doing, looking at dialogue-y things. They're not designed to be dramatic, but they might function dramatically and be interesting. Therefore, we're going to look at them. I am your host, Robert Crichton, and with me today is...
Liza Graham, actor and jack-of-all-bollocks in London.
And we are literally in London. We're actually in the same room. Lateral flow tests have been done. We are not on Zoom. This is a very, very delightful kitchen, and there is coffee. And my God, does that make things so much nicer. So, John Bonham, Master Parson, by Luke Shepherd. Maybe it was actually printed on the front. I don't know. We're going to sort of saunter through this text. It opens with a sort of general homily thing, by the looks of it. I don't know, maybe we should alter lines for that one. And then if you'll be the parson, would you like to be a parson today?
It's always been an ambition of mine.
I'll be John Bonham. We'll just have a bit of a read through. It's not very long, it's very short. Some dialogues are very long, and some dialogues are just far away. I'll do the first line, you do the second line of the opening homily, and then we'll saunter into the thing. Alas, poor fool, so sore ye be laid.
No marvel it is, though your shoulders ache.
For ye bear a great god which ye yourselves made.
Make of it what you will, it is a wafer cake.
Between two irons printed it is, and bake.
And look where idolatry is, Christ will not be there.
Wherefore lay down your burden, an idol ye do bear.
Alas, poor fools.
And it's actually, it's alas, poor fools, in the version I've got here.
There's lineation.
Line. There's lineation to, yeah. To, yeah, so... So if you're in any doubt what this is about, we're going into theological issues here. So let's just say this is not an ecumenical... Well, it is an ecumenical matter, I suppose.
I'm just loving the exposition of in-period cooking technology. Mm. I've seen wafering irons, which basically they're two broad, flat discs of metal with... designs imprinted on them, rather like a waffle iron, but the designs are usually holy. They often feature the Virgin and Child. And the discs of metal are attached to two very long handles. So you get your ball of dough, you sandwich it between the two discs of metal, you close it with the long handles, then you hold it over the fire until it is baked. And that was how they made communion wafers in those times, although that was also how they made... wafers that were not holy, that were just, fun to eat. Mm.
Liza was doing gestures there, which sadly doesn't read on the podcast, but, you know.
It was... I did my best to explain it verbally.
Yes. Shall we read some text?
Yes, indeed. What? John Bond, good morrow to thee.
Now good morrow, Master Parson, so mo I thee.
What meanest thou, John, to be at work so soon?
The sooner I begin, the sooner shall I have done, for I tend to work no longer than none.
Marry, John, for that God's blessing on thy heart. For surely some there be will go to plough and cart, and set naught by this holy Corpus Christi even.
They are the more to blame, I swear by St. Stephen. But tell me, Master Parson, one thing, and you can... What saint is Copsy Kirsty? A man or a woman?
Why, John, knowest thou not that? I tell thee it was a man. It is Christ his own self, and tomorrow is his day. We bear him in procession, and thereby know it ye may.
I know, Master Parson. Nah, by my faith, me think it is a mad thing that ye say that it should be a man. How can it come to pass? Because ye may him bear within so small a glass.
Why, neighbor John, and art thou not there? Now may I perceive ye love this new gear.
Gods forbode, master, I should be of that faction. I question why your mastership in way of communication. A plain man ye may see, well speak, as cometh to mind. Ye must hold us accused, for low men be but blind. I am an old fellow of 50 winter and more, and yet in all my life I knew not this before.
No, indeed? Why sayst thou so? Upon thyself thou liest. Thou hast ever known the sacrament to be the body of Christ.
Ye, sir, ye say true all that I know indeed, and yet, as I remember it, it is not in my creed. But as for Cropsey Kirsty to be a man or no, I knew not till this day by the way my soul shall to.
Why, foolish fellow, I tell thee it is so, for it was so determined by the church long ago. It is both the sacrament and very Christ himself.
No, please, a masked parson, then make ye Christ an elf, and the maddest made man that ever body saw.
What? Peace, madman, thou speakest like a daw. It is not possible his manhood for to see.
Why, sir, ye tell me it is even very he, and if it be not his manhood, it godhead must be.
I tell thee none of both. What meanst thou? Art thou mad?
No, neither mad nor drunk, but to learn I am glad, for to displease your mastership I would be very loath. Ye grant me here plainly that it is none of both, then it is but a cake. But I pray ye be not wroth.
Wroth, quotha, by the mass? Thou makest me swear an oath. I had liever with a doctor of divinity to reason than with a stubble cur that eateth beans and peasen.
Oh, I cry ye mercy, Master Parson, patience for a season. In all this communication is neither felony nor per treason.
No, by the mass, but hearest thou, it is plain heresy.
Oh, I am glad it chanced so there was not witness by. And if there had, I cared not, for ye spake as ill as I. I speak, but as I heard you say, I wot not what ye thought. Ye said it was not God nor man, and made it worse than naught.
I meant not so. Ye took me wrong.
Ah, sir, ye sing another song. I dare not reason with you long. I see well now ye have a knack to say a thing and then go back.
Oh, no, John, I was but a little overseen. But thou meantest not good faith, I ween, in all this talk that was us between.
And there I'd normally ring a bell or something, but I don't have a bell with me, so I can't.
I can get you a bell.
No, it's all right. Next time. There's lots of interesting things that I'm picking up. Verbal echoes of other texts. There's lots of bits that they're commonplace phrases, so you hear them a lot. You know, felony, neither felony nor treason, singing another song, things like that. Specifically, I know that turns up in Summoning of Everyman, but you know, these are commonplaces that turns a phrase that you just get everywhere. But it sort of bounces around really nicely, and yeah, I'm liking John Bond very much.
Just asking questions.
Yeah, man, you know, who is this Kirsty Christie? And so I'm thinking actually that associating this particular text with, you know, we should connect this with you know, Corpus Christi pageants. You know, specifically the demonstration of the host and you know, the celebration of the body of Christ, which is what we're talking about here. We're not talking about mystery plays. We're talking about the ceremonial side of things, of which we have. Did we do a Lydgate, which did a Corpus Christi?
I think we did. But just to remind anyone listening, Corpus Christi is a holiday in late summer, I think.
Yeah, it's a movable feast.
And the host, that is the communion wafer, is paraded through the streets in an ornamental little box called a pyx, and it's paraded through the streets by the clergy, and you're supposed to follow it in a triumphal procession.
Mm. And that sort of sometimes makes it difficult to sort out mystery cycles, because mystery cycles sometimes also happen on Corpus Christi.
Yes, isn't there a really anti-Semitic play of the sacrament where...
There is, and that's the other thing this is reminding me of, but in reverse, because here they're sort of mocking the wafers, and it's the turn of phrase of cake, John Bond said at one point, which is exactly the same. So it's like John Bond is the weird anti-Semitic characters in Play of the Sacrament here. It's sort of that it's backflip has happened in 50 years.
Yeah, that... but then the sacrament itself is not on stage... implicitly not on stage in this dialogue,
no.
Because Corpus Christi is tomorrow in this dialogue.
Yes.
They're just, they're arguing about it. It's not sitting right there in its picks.
And so
you have to make the wafers freshly.
Mm. Of which it's another satire about the keeping of the wafers, which we may or may not look at some point in the future.
If you get an excuse to eat some wafers, you absolutely should. They're absolutely delicious.
Mm. But so the central argument here is, of course, is it a literal transfiguration of body and of a wafer into the body of Christ, or is it just a ceremonial element? And so this is an evangelical Protestant text questioning things that are more the previous Catholic doctrine has put in place, and written during the reign of Edward VI. So Protestantism suddenly, there's quite a lot of this material suddenly starts coming pouring out.
Yeah, I mean, we're still establishing the nature of Protestantism at this point, and there's a whole spectrum of people who believe that their version is what Protestantism is. And there's some pretty extreme iconoclasm that they, you know, they take I forget the number of the commandment, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images.
Mm.
And so this is when painted churches get whitewashed and some stained glass windows get destroyed, although the majority get destroyed during the Civil War, much later. And images of saints, the wooden painted statues of saints that people would often leave offerings to, they're taken down or you know, the practice of leaving offerings to them is discouraged, or making ornate clothing for them. And the host is part of that because, like I said earlier, it would often be stamped with the image of, say, the Virgin and Child, or Christ in glory, or something.
And it's this...
We know this because there are extant wafering irons.
Yes. So we're in a period of great change. So, you know, Henry VIII... went a certain amount, it all was sort of pushed because of circumstances, but, you know, his theological position was quite conservative. And then when he dies, Edward VI goes the other way and goes much more. But all of these things are a series of battles that are going on as to what the nature of Christianity should be within a separated confession after the break with Rome. So this is part of that debate, and it's doing it in quite an engaging manner, it has to be said. So far, I've enjoyed their little back and forth. You know, there is character here. This is performable as a text, I feel, you know, regardless of what we think about its content. But, you know, you have a knack to say a thing and then go back. You can't do backseas. I heard you say it.
John is every annoying guy on the internet.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the person also might be annoying. Who knows? We'll find out as we go on. Shall I take it from the last line?
Yes, that would be helpful. I mean, just on actually the nature of the parson, the clearly you're getting very cross at one point because I go, you know, I pray you be not wroth. Right.
It's true. I called you a stubble cur and that eateth beans and peasen.
So you're getting very cross, and I'm being terribly reasonable. I think that's the dynamic here. I'm just going to, in my simple way, explain what I think, and you're going to get incredibly annoyed with me.
Shut up and eat some beans.
Yeah, know your place. Right. Yes.
No, John, I was but a little overseen. But thou meantest not good faith, I ween, in all this talk that was us between.
Oy? No, trow, it shall not so be that John Barnes shall an heretic be called. Then might ye say him so foul befall.
But now, if thou wilt, mark me well. From beginning to ending, I will thee tell of the godly service that shall be tomorrow. That or I have done, no doubt thou wilt sorrow. To hear... Let's see. That or I have done, no doubt thou wilt sorrow to hear that such things should be foredone. And yet in many places they have begun to take away the old and set up new. Believe me, John, this tale is true.
Go to, Mass Parson, say on and well to thrive. Ye be the jolliest gemman that ever saw in my life.
We shall first have matins. Is it not a godly hearing?
Fie, yes, me think 'tis a shameful gay cheering. For oft times on my prayers, when I take no great keep, ye sing so arrantly well, ye make me fall asleep.
Then have we procession, and Christ about we bear.
That is a poison holy thing, for God himself is there.
Then come we in and ready us dress full solemnly to go to mess.
That is not here a mischievous thing. The mess is vengeance holy for all they're saying.
Then say we confiteor and miseriatur.
Jeez, Lord, 'tis abominable matter.
And then we stand up to the altar.
This gear is as good as Our Lady's Psalter.
And so goes forth with the other deal, till we have read the pistol and gospel.
That is good, Master Parson, I know right well.
Is that good? Why, what sayest thou to the other?
Marry, horrible good, I say, none other.
So is all the mass, I dare avow this, as good in every point as pistol or gospel is.
Ah, the foul evil it is, who would think so much, in faith I ever thought that there had been no such.
Then have we the canon that is holiest.
A spiteful gay thing of all that ever I wist.
Then have we the memento even before the sacring.
Ye are mournly well learned, I see, by your reckoning, that ye will not forget such an elish thing.
And after that, we consecrate very God and man, and turn the bread to flesh with 5 words we can.
The devil ye do, I trow. There is pestilence business. Ye are much bound to God for such a spittle holiness. A gallows gay gift with 5 words alone to make both God and man, and yet ye see none. Ye talk so unreasonable well, it maketh my heart learn. As elder fellow as I am, I see ye well I may learn.
Yea, John. And then with words holy and good, even by and by we turn the wine to blood.
Blow, will ye see, low? Who would have thought it, that ye would so soon from blood to wine to blood have brought it? And yet, except my mouth be better tasted than mine, I cannot feel it other than that it should be wine. And yet I won't ne'er a cause, there may be why, perchance ye have drunk blood oftener than ever did I.
Truly, John, it is blood, though it be wine in taste. As soon as the word is spoke, the wine is gone and past.
Aye, sessions on it for me, my wits are me benumb, for I cannot study where the wine should become.
Study, quotha, beware, and let such matter go. To meddle much with this may bring ye soon to woe.
Yea, but Master Parson, ye think it were right if I desired you to make my black ox white, and you say it is done, and still it's black in sight, ye might me deem a fool for to believe so light.
I marvel much ye will reason so far. I fear if ye use it, it will ye mar.
No, no, sir, I trust of that I will beware. I pray you with your matter again forth to fare.
And then we go forth and Christ's body receive, even the very same that Mary did conceive.
The devil it is, ye have a great grace to eat God and man in so short a space.
And so we make an end as it lieth in an order. But now the blessed mass is hated in every border, and railed on and reviled. with words most blasphemous, but I trust it will be better with the help of Catechismus. For though it came forth but even that other day, yet hath it turned many to their old way, and where they hated Mass and had it in disdain, there have they Mass and Matins in Latin tongue again. Yea, even in London self, John, I tell thee truth. They be full glad and merry to hear of this, God knoweth.
Even in London. By my troth, Mass Parson, I like full well your talk. But Mass be no more Massins. The right way will I walk, for though I have no learning, yet I know cheese from chalk. And I can perceive your juggling as crafty as you walk. And leave your devilish Mass and the communion to you take, and then will Christ be with you, even for his promise sake.
Why art thou such a one, and kept it so close? Well, all is not gold that hath a fair gloss. Farewell, John Bonn. God bring thee in better mind.
We thank you, sir, for that you have seemed very kind. But pray not so for me, for I am well enough. Whistle, boy, drive forth! God speed us in the pow. Round on. Forth that awesome crab. Three company, garland, with our black blab. Have again ball before. Hey, three, ooh. Shirley boy, come with that. Homeward we may go.
Finis. Imprinted at London by John Day and William Sears, dwelling in Sepulchre's Parish at the Sign of the Resurrection, a little above Holborn Conduit. Cum gratia et privilegio ad imprimendum solum.
Now, which mystery play is it? It's a Cain and Abel. I think it's Townley, where you've got the whole drawing the drawing the plough, or something like that. There's a whole...
Yes, it sounds like Townley. Townley puts a lot of comedy into Cain and Abel.
Yeah, and that bit at the end, because, I mean, I haven't changed any of the spelling on any of that bit at the end, because I just went, haven't... I think these are just noises.
Well,
some of this, I didn't know how to parse any of it, so
well,
I just gave up.
Brown Dun is going to be one of his plough animals.
Yeah, that's why I assumed that most of these were names. But I hadn't really parsed any of it, so I was just assuming that, you know, after Godspeed Us and the Plough, it's basically an exit line, and it makes it dynamic. It makes it, you know, we now have a location. We're out in a field, presumably, and the parson's just walking by.
Yes.
And that's there's interesting little bits. I think when we rejoined the text, I was initially a bit lost actually as to what was going on. But actually, it's just a recap of the procession and the various parts of the ceremonial, isn't it?
Indeed, and it reminds me again of those scenes in morality plays where someone serious says a line and then the vice repeats the vice tells us in an aside what he thinks. So John Bonn, even though according to the playwright he's morally in the right, is sort of in the role of the vice here, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the question: do we count these as asides? Is Parson overhearing? You know, that is a poison holy thing. For God Himself is there. You know, it. You know, in that sense, how dramatic is it in by implication, or is he just saying it very openly?
I think,
because I don't quite know how to pitch those lines actually, because some of
them sound
like they could be, you know, he's being very positive and things about elements of the ceremony.
Saying things like vengeance holy, you know, it's the sort of thing where it could be positive and he probably intends it negatively, but he also probably intends it to pass as positive. Who knows?
Yeah, because is he being serious when he says, you know, is it that he just doesn't understand what certain words mean with John Bonn? You know, Jesus Lord, tis an abominable matter. Does he think that's a nice word? Because the thing is, he's not against religion. He's against elements of the ceremony. And that's...
Yes.
We need to also make a decision. We've got this problem, of course. We've got masses spelt as mess...
Well, sometimes it needs to be mess for the sake of
the
rhyme.
And that's the thing. I modernised it where it wasn't in a rhyme to mass, but I'm wondering whether what to do with that, whether we just go with that sort of slight... Because it's an accent thing to a degree as well.
It could be. Mm. It could be elevated up here. It could be mess.
Yes.
But
because John Bonn is written it with a slight dialect. He's using a few dialect words.
Yeah, I love that. I love how it's written. In a sort of mummer set with, you know, Zeds for S's. There was one Eich for I. Mm. Things like that.
And it's, but it's not actually excessive. It's just to give you a hint of his character. It's just enough to give you that run-in, whereas the parson is slightly more, he's much more, well, he's not RP, but, you know, he's much more.
He's a little more high.
Yeah. And I do like that. Even in London. Even well, in London, they're not that godless.
Well, no, London will have, with all its students and its abundance of clergy and its manic street preachers, London will have been a hotbed of doctrinal debate. Mm. So I'm saying, yay, even in London, London self. So where they hated mass and had it in disdain. So there's been, you know, your backlash against anything even vaguely Catholic, and then saying that the new catechisms or whatever have made people more at peace with ceremony as it used to be with masses that include music and Latin.
Mm. Yes, people like liking tradition and wanting to go back to. Tradition. I mean, Edward was very keen on the sort of public preachy side of things. I mean, you know, even building. I think this is off the top of my head. I didn't double check this, but I'm fairly certain he actually builds a specific preaching area in St Paul's Churchyard, or it is built at the same time, and there are big things there. I could be wrong about that. Don't take that as gospel, as it were. We've got the parson going through the ceremonial, we've got John commenting on it, we have that slight awkward shift of language, you know, about spiteful gay thing, doesn't quite land in a modern context. I mean, we know it means bright and cheerful, but it's that weird juxtaposition he's using all the time. John Bond is using opposite words to each other, you know, it's a spiteful gay thing. It's this poison holy thing. It's doing interesting job. It's quite subtle, actually. It's also not subtle. I love the fact John Bond is the hero.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a comedy rustic. He is comedic. But he is also just the voice of common sense. That's the logic of it.
Yes, and in so many of the other dialogues we've looked at, it's been a knowledgeable person instructing a simple person, or in the case of Lucidus and Dubius, the knowledgeable person triumphs over being challenged by the simple person. But here, the simple person, the salt of the earth peasant, has it right, and the parson has it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, and say it's got life to it. It's got, you know, it is, you know, it's not going to rock anybody's world, and obviously it's got a very specific propagandic purpose. But it sort of goes into that what's happening in the late 1530s, early 1540s-ness of other plays, which are proper plays rather than this, which is just a dialogue. But there's nothing just about being dialogue. So, any final thoughts?
Well, just that I don't know, when there's a time of major cultural change, everything seems like a tipping point. But this dialogue does seem to occur at a sort of balance point between what's seen as the old way and what's seen as the new. And it's interesting that John Bond reacts against being thought of as in favor of the new way. Yeah, I mean, it's a piece of, I suppose, religious propaganda in the end, but it's very well crafted, and it's not unentertaining.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, he does make, you know, some solid points about, you know, I think it would be a stretch to call it the scientific method, but John Bond does say, you know, well, I've tasted the wine, and it tastes remarkably like wine. You must taste blood more often than I do.
Parson's like, I do what?
Yeah, it's like, so.
Plot twist, vampire priest.
Well, you know, we've had vampire cupid, so let's go. So, all that remains is for us to go away and record this in a more proper fashion, potentially. So, yeah, maybe you'll hear, without us stumbling and tripping over and getting words wrong, a better version of this in the future. Thank you to Liza, and goodbye.
You're welcome. Goodbye.